hellhound in the lead. Marina instinctively lifted Mr. Bow and uttered the magic spell she had used so many times before. The bowstring glowed faintly before fading as she tried to pull it back. She reached for it again as the second hellhound turned toward her. Power surged through her when she felt Mike's hand on her back. Mr. Bow hummed to life. The powerful glow of the string vibrated in her hands. Marina pulled back the string and released one magical arrow after another at the beast. The third arrow struck it through the forehead, and it disintegrated into a puff of ash mere feet from her. Marina turned on the third hellhound. Two of Orion's men were firing bolts of electricity at the beast. Her arrow struck it in the side at the same time as the men buried their tridents into it. The beast glowed brightly, before dissolving into a pool of ash.
"Orion!" Mike shouted.
Orion had sprung upward, flying over the head of a snapping hellhound. He turned and landed on its back. Raising his trident above his head, he brought it down on the hellhound's neck with such a force that the creature stumbled before its head was severed, and its body rolled to the side. Marina turned and fired arrows into both the body and the head.
"Look out!" Mike yelled,
grabbing her around the waist and pulling her down to the ground. Long tentacles from a black vine crawling along the palace walls struck out with deadly force. Three of Orion's men grunted and crumpled to the ground as sharp spears pierced their bodies. Drago turned and ejected a long blaze of fire on the vines, driving them back.
"There!"
Marina breathed out, pointing to one of Orion's guards who was fighting against the moving vines.
"We have to help him."
"Stay back until I tell you," Mike ordered, rolling to his side and pulling one of the small jars out of the knapsack. Yanking the lighter out of his pocket, he lit one of the Molotov cocktails.
"Now!"
he shouted as he tossed the flaming jar at the vines. They both rushed forward as the jar exploded, sending flames up the withering vines. The guard fell back several steps and glanced at Mike in surprise. Mike tossed two of the small jars to the guard. The man nodded in understanding. Throwing the jar toward the top of the vines, the guard aimed his trident at it and fired a bolt of electricity. The flammable liquid exploded, raining fire from the top of the vines downward. Mike turned and threw three more jars while Marina lit two of her torches from the burning creature nearby. She gave one to Mike. They jabbed them at the twisting vines, sending the thorny limbs into retreat while Orion and his men worked at killing the half-dozen hellhounds that had converged on the courtyard to stop them. Marina's anguished cry echoed above the sounds of fighting and the crackle of the fire. A large hellhound had knocked over two of the statues, which shattered and turned to ash. Her fingers trembled as she pulled back on Mr. Bow. The hellhound was heading straight for Isha. The glow of the bowstring faded when she pulled it back.
"Mike! We need Mike!"
Mr. Bow frantically said.
"Mike!"
Marina screamed, searching for him through the smoke. Mike turned to her. He ran toward her, but Marina knew he wouldn't make it in time. Her lips parted on a scream of denial as the hellhound raised a sharp paw to swipe Isha out of its way. The scream died on her lips when the hellhound was suddenly lifted in the air and tossed against the front doors of the palace.
"What the—"
Mike choked. Marina felt him grab her around the waist and pull her to the side as a swarm of monsters swept through the courtyard. The cyclops, minotaurs, and centaurs circled around the statues, forming an impenetrable wall.
"It is Nali!"
Marina half-cried, half-cheered as the Empress stood protectively over her brother.
"That's Nali! And Charlie? How in the hell did Charlie get here?"
Mike whispered in shock, staring up at the monster that was the size of a giant before his gaze lowered to the pup that was excitedly barking next to Isha's statue. Nali lifted her head and snarled. The ground trembled with the sound. Marina pulled her gaze away from Nali when Capion came up to them.
"Hurry!"
Capion ordered, turning and firing on another hellhound.
"There are more than we thought. Nali and Asher will handle the ones outside."
"Asher? He shouldn't be—"
Marina started to protest. She glanced over her shoulder when Mike grabbed her left arm, while Capion held on to her right. They pulled her to the front doors of the palace that now stood wide open. Drago burned away any residual vines that had survived. Marina pulled free and grabbed the two unlit torches. Shivering, she followed Capion as he entered the palace. Behind her, Mike followed, then Drago. She could only hope they were in time to save the king and queen. Mike glanced behind them as they entered the palace. Outside, in the courtyard, flashes of light and the screams of the hellhounds echoed through the night. He caught a glimpse of Charlie's golden body in the protective circle of Nolly's monsters. With a shake of his head, he still couldn't believe the huge monster snarling out orders was the slender empress that he had met. Nolly's appearance shocked the shit out of him. How could someone so... whatever, turn into a monster that looked like something out of a 1930s King Kong meets the Abominable Snowman movie? Well, okay, with her long white hair, she looked more like a female version of an adorable snow woman rather than King Kong, but still, what the hell? He wondered what other talents the amazing Empress of the Monsters had. With a shake of his head, he forced himself to focus on their present situation. The danger was far from over. If anything, it was just beginning. "Where do you think Magna would hold the king?" Mike asked, as they stepped into the cold foyer.
"I suspect she keeps him in the throne room. As long as he remains on the throne, he keeps the power. Magna would know that if King Ore were to abdicate the throne, she would lose any chance of using the gift from the goddess against the other kingdoms," she explained.
"What's so important about this gift? Why should it matter who has it?" Mike asked, glancing around with a frown. Everything was icy cold, and he swore he could see something moving in the shadows. It was probably more of the black shit that made up the vines. He moved his hand to his gun holster, undid the snap, and pulled his gun free.
"Our king is a good leader. Queen Magicka and King Ore protect the Orb of Eternal Light. It is what gives us our magic. Without both of them, the light will fade, and so will our kingdom," Marina explained.
"I don't like the sound of that. Look out," Mike hissed, pulling Marina back as one of the shadows reached greedily for her. "What is this stuff?"
"I don't know," Marina whispered in a trembling voice. "Before Magna came, I never saw anything like it."
"Be careful. I see it moving over the walls," Capion said. "Where's Orion? Hell, where did Drago go?" Mike asked, noticing that Drago had disappeared as well. "Orion searches to make sure the queen is safe. I swore to Queen Jenny that I would protect him," Capion said, glancing at the two of them. "Go. If you find them, let them know we are heading to the throne room," Mike said. "Be careful," Capion instructed. "You too," Mike warned, watching as Capion nodded and turned to disappear down the long corridor. Mike swept his gaze over the shadows. "You'd better light the torches." Marina nodded and quickly lit the last two torches. She handed one to Mike. She watched as he swung it towards the dark shadows. The creature pulled back with a loud hiss, shrinking away from the flames.
"You were right. Whatever it is, it does not like the flames," Marina whispered.
"Do you know the way to the throne room?" he asked.
"Yes. Follow me," she murmured.
Mike followed Marina, careful to keep his eyes on the shadows as they moved down the long corridor. Curious, he lifted the torch. The shadows recoiled even when the flame was not close to them. It would appear it had another weakness. "It doesn't like the light," he observed. They continued to move quietly down the corridor, turning several times to see the dark shadows moving behind them, but staying away from the light. Mike swallowed and gripped the butt of his gun. He doubted his gun would make much of an impact on whatever was covering the walls, but it gave him a sense of comfort. Marina's soft cry of warning drew his attention forward when another shape separated from the shadows. This one didn't shrink from the light.
"A hellhound!"
Marina choked, holding the torch out in front of her. Mike raised his arm and fired just as the hellhound released a roar and jumped. He and Marina dove to the side and rolled as the creature landed and turned. Mike fired again, knocking the creature backwards. It stumbled and shook before collapsing with a small hole in the center of its forehead.
Shit, Mike muttered, climbing to his feet.
Are you okay? He asked, as Marina bent over to pick up their torches.
Yes, I am glad you have your weapon. Hold these and touch me, she instructed in a trembling voice.
Me too, Mike muttered.
He didn't add that his weapon was down to one bullet. He slid his gun into the holster and took the torches from Marina. Gripping the two torches in one hand, he picked up the pack holding the rest of the Molotov cocktails, slid the strap onto his shoulder, and placed his left hand against her back. Marina pulled back the bowstring and fired several arrows into the hellhound. He watched as it glowed for a moment before turning to ash. Handing the torches back to her, he decided he'd like to keep a couple of the Molotov cocktail jars handy just in case. He lowered the pack and pulled two out. He reshouldered the pack and kept the two in his free hand. With one last glance at where the dead hellhound had been, he motioned for Marina to continue moving down the corridor. They were almost to the throne room. Hopefully they wouldn't encounter any more hellhounds, but he wasn't going to bet on it. He paused behind Marina when they turned the corner. At the end of the hall stood a set of elaborately carved doors that led into the throne room. Two hellhounds paced back and forth in front of the doors, snarling sentinels preventing any from entering or exiting the room.
Your weapon? Marina whispered, turning to look at him.
Mike shook his head. I have one bullet, he said. It might slow one of them, but not both.
He fingered the jar in his hand. He ran his gaze over the throne room doors. It was covered with the same tangle of vines they encountered before. His gaze flickered to the two beasts pacing back and forth. Perhaps they could kill two hellhounds and take out the thorny vines at the same time.
Hold this, Mike ordered, as he shrugged the bag off his shoulder and knelt.
Marina quickly took the two jars and his torch.
What are you going to do?
She asked, watching as he quickly opened the bag and began tying together the wicks of the half-dozen jars that were left. Mike glanced up at Marina and smiled.
I'm gonna light this place up, he informed her in a grim voice.
Returning his focus to what he was doing, Mike finished twisting the wicks together and slid them back into the bag. He stood up and nodded to Marina as he held the open bag out to her. He started counting slowly once she lit the thick cord with her torch. Turning, he took off running toward the snarling creatures that stood frozen in front of the doors. He threw the bag at them and dove to the side, rolling as they both jumped to grab it. The moment they did, it exploded in a fiery inferno that lit up the massive corridor. Mike slid to a stop beside a large stone planter. Rolling to his side, he stared at the two hellhounds that were now engulfed in flames. Their loud roars echoed as they fell back against the doors. The dark, shadowy creatures on the walls writhed in agony as they were ignited in flames. One of the hellhounds rose up on its hind quarters before falling backwards, crashing through one of the huge doors to the throne room.
Come!
Marina cried out as she raced forward. Mike rolled to his feet. Marina covered her face as she jumped over the dead hellhound and through the burning doorway. Mike did the same, landing on the other side and rolling before he rose back to his feet and turned to look back. The thick gel from the jars continued to burn brightly behind them. The light from the flames drove back the vines on the inside of the throne room. He shifted on his feet and turned to look around the large room. His eyes took in the remnants of a meal on the long table. His gaze turned to Marina when she brushed a long strand of her hair back from her face. Her eyes were glued to the throne. He followed her gaze, locking on a pair of vacant eyes.
My king,
Marina whispered, as she slowly started walking toward the throne.
My king, we must get you out of here, she said in a louder voice.
I don't think so, a woman's raspy voice replied. You see, I need him as well.
Mike watched as a very beautiful, pale-skinned woman stepped out from behind the throne, His eyes immediately moved to the weapon in the woman's hand. The long, curved blade left him in no doubt that while she might not be able to use her magic like Marina, she could still destroy the kingdom by using the knife. Instinctively, his hand slid inside his jacket and he removed his gun. He flicked the safety off and pressed it against his side as they continued to walk forward in slow, measured steps. Mike ran his gaze over the woman. Magna's rich black hair hung in a tangled wave down to her waist. Her skin was almost translucent and shimmered like a white pearl. Her lips were painted as black as her hair, making them stand out. But it was her eyes that held them. There was something in them. If it was anyone else, he might have thought it was desperation. Her eyes were a light green with swirls of black in them that reminded Mike of the black vines along the walls.
"Release him, Sea Witch," Marina demanded. "We are not alone. The Sea King, King Draco, and the other rulers have joined with my people to stop you."
Magna's high-pitched laugh echoed throughout the room. Mike's hand tightened on his pistol when he saw her raise the knife and lightly drag it across the king's throat. She murmured something too low for him to hear before she turned to look at Marina with disdain.
"Orion is bound by the laws of his pathetic people. He is weak and unable to harm me," Magna replied with a shrug.
"He might be, but I'm not," a loud voice echoed from behind them. "I already told Orion I was going to kill you, bitch. After I turn you to ash, not even the bottom dwellers of the deep will have anything to feed on," Draco snarled.
"I am bound by the laws no longer, Magna," Orion warned, stepping in behind Draco.
Magna's eyes jerked up and she released a hiss. A long spiderweb of shadowy creatures hidden in the recesses of the ceiling swirled down in a cloud, wrapping their thorny tentacles around Draco and lifting him up. Mike heard Orion shout to his men as more of the deadly vines surrounded them. He turned to stare at Magna. Her eyes were almost completely black as she focused on Draco, Orion, and his men. He shot his hand out and stopped Marina when she started forward.
"Wait,"
he said, staring at Magna's face. Marina turned in surprise.
"She is enchanting you. We must destroy her," she hissed in frustration.
Mike glanced at Marina and shook his head.
"No, it's something else," he replied in a puzzled voice.
"I won't be defeated. You will doom your people, dragon,"
Magna's voice rose when Draco shifted into his dragon form to fight against the steely threads trying to rip him apart.
"No,"
she screamed as if in pain when Draco released a burst of fire at the ceiling. Mike reacted when Magna lifted the knife. He raised his hand and fired his last bullet. The bullet struck Magna in the left shoulder, causing her to spin around. The blade flew from her hand and landed several feet away. A swirling black cloud rose from where she lay, rising up toward the ceiling and reforming.
"Fire on the black cloud,"
Orion ordered, lifting his trident and aiming at the massive cloud. Mike and Marina ran up the steep stairs leading to the throne. The king, free from the threat of Magna's evil magic consuming him, fell forward, gasping and shaken. Mike grabbed King Ore's left arm, while Marina slid her arm around his waist and lifted him. Together, they half-carried, half-dragged him down the steps. Mike lowered the man to the floor and turned back toward Magna. His gaze flickered to the mass above her.
"Don't!" Marina warned, grabbing his arm. "Leave her. This is something not from our world."
Mike glanced back, torn. The training inside him wouldn't let him just leave Magna. She was vulnerable and needed help. He turned to look at the spot where Orion and his men were firing intense blasts of energy at the black swarm. He shifted on his knee to see that Draco was also breathing fire at the swirling cloud. Whatever it was, they were barely making a dent in it.
"I can't leave her," he said, grasping Marina's hand and squeezing it. "Take care of your king."
"Mike!"
Marina cried out, her hand slipping from his arm as she tried to stop him. Mike sprinted up the steps and slid across the marble tile to where Magna lay. He touched her chin, turning it toward him. Her eyes fluttered open, and she stared at him with surprisingly clear eyes.
"Go,"
she whispered in a weak voice.
"Not without you,"
he said, with a glance upward.
"No,"
she said, hissing in pain when he started to slide his arm around her.
"No, I know how to kill it now."
"Go," she said again, this time in a voice filled with determination and sorrow.
"What I have to do will kill you all if you don't. Please give me this chance to right some of the wrongs I have been forced to do."
Mike stared into Magna's intense green eyes and turned to look at Marina. She shook her head and pointed. Glancing upward, he could see the dark swarm massing together and pushing back against the assault of Orion and Draco. He looked down when he felt a slender hand on his arm.
"Go,"
Magna whispered in resignation.
"There is no hope for me. I would be sentenced to death anyway. Let me at least have some purpose in my life."
Mike swallowed and reluctantly pulled back as Magna struggled to rise to her feet. He turned and quickly moved back down the steps as Magna began to chant. Reaching down, he lifted King Ore over his shoulder, fireman style.
"Let's go,"
he instructed Marina. Marina looked at Magna. Her arms were raised and blood coated the front of her white gown as she chanted. Her gaze was focused upward on the circling swarm above.
"What?"
Marina started to say. Mike shook his head and reached for her arm.
"She knows what she is doing," he said. "We've got to get out of here. Orion, get your men out of here. Magna is going to kill that thing,"
he yelled as he hurried past the Sea King.
"Fall back," Orion ordered. "Drago, get out of here."
The group continued to fire as they fell back through the burned doors. Drago was the last, shifting as he stepped out. Orion gripped Drago's arm when he paused.
"Think of Carly and your children, my friend,"
Orion quietly said, pulling on Drago's arm. Drago grunted and turned. Breaking into a run, they retreated as fast as they could down the corridor. They were almost to the end when a brilliant flash of light exploded behind them, followed by a shockwave that knocked them forward off their feet. Mike tried to shield the man on his shoulder as he fell. It took several long minutes before they were able to catch their breath. Mike rolled onto his back, his ears ringing as he reached out and searched beside him for Marina. He breathed a sigh of relief when he felt her small hand grip his. Turning his head, he stared at Orion. Grief and resignation glimmered in the man's eyes. Mike suspected he'd known that Magna had not been acting of her own free will until the end, when she finally destroyed the creature.
"What? What happened? What have you done to my beautiful palace?"
King Ore murmured in shock, staring at the destruction.
"Magicka is going to be furious."
Dry laughter echoed in the corridor, along with more than a few groans. Mike pushed up into a sitting position and looked around. All of the black vines were gone. There was a huge hole in the ceiling of the throne room. The first rays of daylight shone down over the two elegant chairs that sat unscathed on the raised platform.
"Ore, where is my husband?"
Magicka demanded. Mike watched as the king turned when he heard his name. The man's thin face softened and a smile curved his lips. Mike rose to his feet and helped Ore stand.
"Thank you,"
Ore said, his eyes glued to his wife's frantic face.
"Oh, Ore,"
Magicka whispered, her voice filled with trembling tears.
"You're back."
"Yes, my beloved. I'm so sorry,"
he murmured, wrapping his arms around her and holding her close.
"I thought I could stop her, but it wasn't her."
"Your Majesties," a strong voice called.
"Isha!"
Mike heard Marina's cry of happiness. He turned and watched her scramble over the debris. A young man, only a few years younger than him, met her halfway. Isha gripped her by the waist and lifted her up in the air. Marina's delighted giggles echoed through the devastated palace corridors.
"You're okay?" "That means..." Marina started to say.
"Woof!" "Charlie, how in the hell did you..." Mike exclaimed, turning as the pup raced down the corridor, hopping over the debris as if it wasn't there.
Mike opened his arms and caught the flying body with a muttered oath.
Jeff?
Mike stared in surprise when, instead of a dog, he found himself holding a laughing teenage boy. Jeff grinned up at him. Mike shook his head, closed his eyes, and opened them again.
"When the ogre wasn't looking, I changed into Charlie." "Ogres aren't the smartest creatures," Jeff laughed. "I've been hiding near Isha. I knew you would come. Did you see the monsters? They're everywhere."
"Monsters? Is Empress Nolly here?" Magica asked, patting at her disheveled hair.
"Yes, and King Asher, King Corgan, King Drago, and King Orion,"
Jeff answered excitedly.
"Oh my,"
Magica murmured.
"Ah, Drago, you made it. I guess I won't be able to charm your lovely wife and children into moving to the Isle of the Pirates,"
Asher commented, gingerly jumping from one section to another.
"Hello, Magica. You look lovely as ever."
"Didn't I banish you from the palace, pirate?"
Ore growled, turning so his wife was partially behind him. Asher glanced around the ruins in distaste.
"Only in my dreams, Ore. You look rough, old man,"
Asher remarked.
"I thought you were told to stay away from the palace, Asher," Drago growled, folding his arms across his chest.
"Ah, well, yes. But that is unnecessary now," Asher said, glancing at Marina.
"Your Majesties, I can assure you that King Asher was nowhere near the treasure room," Marina said,
raising her eyebrow at Asher to follow along.
"Treasure? Oh, yes. No, I fear I was much too busy to steal any treasure this time,"
Asher agreed with a grin.
"Then what are you doing here?" Ore demanded.
Asher turned his gaze to Drago.
"I came to say that several of my men reported seeing dragons flying in the direction of the Isle of the Dragons," he said.
All eyes turned to Drago. For a moment, the Dragon King showed no emotion. Mike wasn't sure if the man understood what Asher was trying to tell him, at least for a moment. Drago's eyes darkened to a dusky, glittering gold. Pushing past everyone, they watched as he made a path for the front entry doors. He shifted before he cleared the doors. With a loud roar that rang throughout the Seven Kingdoms, he launched into the sky. In the distance, the sounds of other dragons answering their king could be heard.
"The silence is broken," Magica whispered.
"Not quite, my love, but the Dragon King's people live again,"
Ore replied, in a tired voice. Mike watched as Magica helped her husband through the debris. Her hand waved as they walked, and the broken pieces of the palace slid back into place, as if nothing had ever happened. Mike slowly closed his mouth when he felt a slender hand pushing against his jaw to close it.
"She is very powerful," Marina said with a sigh.
"You think?"
Mike muttered in awe.
"Can we go find Aaron and see if Mother and Father have been returned to normal?" Jeff asked, turning to look at Marina. "Yes, of course," Marina replied, looking at Isha.
"I need to remain here and help the king and queen restore order," Isha said.
"I know,"
Marina replied. Isha smiled at his sister and brother before turning his gaze to Mike. Mike could feel the other man's confusion. It was obvious he wasn't sure which kingdom he came from.
"My name is Mike Holbrook."
"It's a long story," Mike said.
"But a very good one,"
Marina replied, threading her arm through Mike's.
"They are mated," Mr. Bow informed Isha. "They're what?"
Isha exclaimed in surprise. Marina sighed.
"I really don't know why Father gave me this bow," she grumbled.
Mike's soft chuckle turned into a deep, rich laugh. He wrapped his arms around Marina and swung her around. Loosening his arms, he let her slide down his body. He ignored everyone still standing in the corridor and bent his head to kiss her.
God, I love this witch,
he thought, as she returned his kiss with a passion that made his toes curl.
Epilogue. 2 weeks later, Mike stood on the edge of the palace wall, looking out at the ocean. Tomorrow, he would return to his world, with the help of Queen Magicka. Leaning forward, he stood on the wall and gripped the edge of the opening, looking out over the kingdom. While Marina knew he had said he would return to his world, they had not discussed when. Now he needed to figure out how to tell her.
There you are,
Marina laughed. She finished climbing the last of the stairs and came up behind him. Her face glowed with happiness. She wrapped her arms around his waist, threaded her fingers together, and rested her chin on his shoulder blade.
I wondered where you had gone. Isn't this wonderful? I still cannot believe that Queen Magicka and King Oray named this the Fey Day celebration.
Mike chuckled at her delight in finding him. He loosened her hands enough to turn around and pulled her against his body. Bending, he buried his face in the curve of her neck. They stayed like that for several long minutes before Mike raised his head so he could look down into her eyes.
You deserve it.
Without you, none of the kingdoms, especially this one, would have had anything to celebrate. I'm very proud of you, Marina, Mike said, before his expression grew somber.
I have something to tell you. I wanted to wait, but there would never be a good time.
What is it?
Marina asked, gazing up at him.
Queen Magicka is opening a portal for me to return to my world tomorrow. I want you to come with me. It won't take long. I'd like for you to be there, if it is possible,
he suddenly said. The smile on Marina's lips faded. She searched his face. He kept his expression calm. He didn't want her to know that he was worried that he might not be able to return.
I knew that you wanted to return. I talked to father and mother about it before begging an audience with Queen Magicka. They all felt it wouldn't be a problem. You understand?
She swallowed and looked up at him with shimmering eyes.
You know I cannot stay in your world, don't you? Queen Magicka said...
Mike touched her lips with his fingers. He knew what the queen had said. She had warned him that there was no knowing what might happen if Marina went to his world. He had asked about the possibility of Marina going with him, then discarded it, then blew all of his carefully laid plans by blurting out that he wanted her to go. He did not want to jinx their trip by mentioning all the things that could go wrong. He had spent the night thinking of them.
I just need to take care of a few things. We'll only be gone for a few hours, he said.
I love you, Mike. Whatever happens, as long as I'm with you, we will work it out, she swore.
Mike threaded his fingers through her hair and captured her lips. He knew she was right. Queen Magicka and Marina's father had both warned him that if Marina decided to return with him to his world and they stayed, she might lose her gift of magic. There was no guarantee, but there was enough doubt that he couldn't ask that of her. Instead, they would return to his world long enough to leave a message for his sister Ruth, telling her that he was all right and where to find him if she wanted to come. He would also stop by the office and close the missing persons files for Carly and Jenny. He had taken a photo of them together in front of the castle with his cell phone. It was abstract enough to be difficult to pinpoint where they were, but had a date and both women with their children. Fortunately, Carly's were not in the form of their dragons.
It won't take long, he promised, as he pulled back.
I will be there, beside you, forever, she breathed. I love you.
The look in Mike's eyes softened.
I love you, Marina. The moment you touched me, I knew I was a goner, he chuckled, staring down into her glowing eyes.
I'm glad,
she teased. Mike listened to her light laughter as it echoed in the wind. Turning, they looked down over the festive party taking place far below. The people of the Isle of Magic, those from the Isle of the Sea Serpent, and even the reluctant Drago, along with a glowing Carly and their three children, were enjoying the King and Queen celebration.
Mike's thoughts turned to Magna. When they had returned to the throne room after the explosion, there was no sign of her. The charred remains of the creature that had been inside her lay scattered among the ruins of the room. Mike hoped that whatever had happened to Magna, she was finally free of the parasite that had been controlling her.
"Come on," Marina said with a grin, pulling him back to the present. "Jeff and Aaron want us to join them. I will teach you how to use Mr. Bo."
Mike grinned when he saw Jeff and Aaron waving at them. Charlie barked and excitedly danced between the brother and sister. It would appear that Charlie had abandoned him in favor of the two children.
"You're on," he chuckled. "I've been itching to see how that thing works."
"Are you ready?"
Queen Magica asked, standing on the throne platform early the next morning. Mike gave a sharp nod. Next to him, Marina nervously bit her lip. Her parents and Isha stood to the side, silently watching.
"Remember, you will only have until the first rays of the sunrise. If you are not back at the place where you arrived once the sun crests on the horizon, the portal will close, and I cannot open it again. You will be trapped in your world,"
Queen Magica warned, stepping down until she was even with them.
"We understand," Mike replied, reaching out and gripping Marina's hand.
"Marina, do you have your grandmother's stones?"
Queen Magica asked, turning to Marina.
"Father,"
Marina called, turning toward her parents.
"Yes," Aranus said, stepping forward with a small sack.
"Please place them in a circle around Marina and Mike," Queen Magica instructed.
Marina's mother stepped forward to help Aranus. Once they were finished, Cornelia stepped inside the circle and hugged Marina. Mike could see the worry in her eyes.
"I promise to bring her back," he said.
Cornelia gave him an uneven smile and nodded.
"I know you will,"
she murmured, her eyes glistening with unshed tears. Aranus walked over, wrapped an arm around his wife's waist, and gently guided her back from the circle. Queen Magica glanced once more at Mike, and he gave her a nod. The queen began to chant, slowly walking around the circle, until each stone began to glow.
"Oh, I almost forgot,"
Marina said in a soft voice, turning to face him.
"What did you forget?"
he asked, puzzled. Marina lifted her arms and wound them around his neck.
"To distract you,"
she said, capturing his lips. Mike closed his eyes as the colors began to swirl with a dizzying speed. He wrapped his arms around Marina and held her tightly against him. Deciding the distraction was an excellent idea, he lost himself in their kiss. Yahats, Oregon.
"Where are we?"
Marina asked, glancing around her. Mike pushed down the churning in his stomach and took a deep breath of misty and salty air. He knew exactly where they were, on the beach in Yahats State Park, where this whole adventure had begun. Now the question was, how did he get to his house, then into town? Frowning, he remembered that the Rangers had a service yard not far from the point.
"We're on the beach where Charlie and I were before you opened the portal," he explained, trying to gauge which direction he needed to go in the fog. "There is a Ranger's service yard about a half a mile from here. If we are lucky, we might be able to find a vehicle we can borrow."
"Is the fog always this thick?"
Marina asked, turning when he began to pull her up the beach.
"Give it 5 minutes and it could be gone," he chuckled.
They made their way up the beach to the path. It didn't take them long to reach the parking lot. The fog began to lift as they hurried down the road. By the time they reached the service yard, it had cleared. Mike grinned when he saw the pickup truck parked outside the shed. Since the park closed at night, the Rangers were a little less prudent about locking things. They hurried over to the truck. Mike tested the driver's door. Sure enough, it opened. He stepped back and motioned for Marina to get in.
Sliding into the driver's seat, he closed the door before he checked the visor and the glove box for the keys. Frowning when he came up empty-handed, he thought for a moment before he leaned forward and felt under the seat. He closed his fingers around the metal keys. Rookies. If he was staying, he would need to have a talk with Marty. Sliding the key into the ignition, he started the truck and backed it up. Turning the wheel, he turned on the parking lights and pulled up to the main road. If he went out the front entrance, he'd have to pass the ranger's house. Lucky for him, he knew a better way. Turning left, he turned on the lights and headed in the opposite direction, toward a service road for emergency vehicles. Within 20 minutes, they were turning onto the main highway. Mike checked the time on the radio. It was just after 1 in the morning. Sunrise would happen around 7:45, give or take a few minutes. He'd rather be back here with plenty of time to spare. Lifting his phone, he pressed the home button.
"Hello, Mike. How can I help you?"
a soft feminine voice asked.
"The box speaks,"
Marina squeaked, speaking for the first time since they'd reached the highway.
"I'm sorry. I didn't understand what you said," his phone replied.
"Set alarm for 7 a.m., Mike instructed.
"I've set an alarm for 7 a.m., the phone replied.
Mike grinned when he set his cell phone down, and Marina immediately picked it up and began turning it over. She shook it and frowned. Reaching over, he pressed his thumb to the home button, and it lit up.
"We use cell phones here to communicate," he chuckled.
"You captured Queen Jenny and Queen Carly's images in it as well," she said.
"Yes, with the camera," he explained, reaching over and pressing the icon.
"Press the small symbol on the bottom and it will look at you, then press the round button." Marina giggled when she saw herself. Pressing the button, she grunted when she saw her photo. Lifting it up, she studied it for a moment before repeating the process more than 12 times, looking at each one and striking different poses.
"You have just discovered a popular trend here called selfies," Mike laughed.
"I never realized I had such small breasts," she complained, pulling her shirt down to reveal her cleavage and taking a photo.
"Okay, that is enough," Mike said, grabbing the phone out of her hand and sliding it into his jacket pocket. "And your breasts are just right," he informed her in a gruff tone.
3 hours later, Marina walked around the small office where Mike said he worked. They had gone to his house first. He had walked through the rooms, picking up items and placing them in different colored backpacks. She had watched him select and discard items before carefully packing other things. He had given her a number of images in frames and some of his clothing that he wanted to take.
"Can you wrap these so they don't get damaged?" he had asked, in a slightly rough voice.
Marina saw the lines etched around his mouth and knew that he was feeling the strain of having to decide what he could take and what he couldn't. She had nodded.
"Of course," she said, taking the stack into the living room and sitting down on the rug.
Picking up the images, she saw that they were of his family. He had told her of his parents' deaths. It was obvious that their passing still affected him. She paused on the image of him with a woman. They were so similar in appearance that they had to be related.
"That's a picture of me and Ruth last year at Yosemite." "That reminds me, I need to call her," Mike said, turning and pulling his phone out as he headed back to his bedroom. "Damn it, sis. Don't you ever answer your phone. This is Mike. I wanted to let you know that I'm okay. Listen, something incredible has happened, but I wanted to let you know that I'm safe and happy. Oh, Charlie is with me, so don't worry about the damn dog. I've met the most incredible woman."
As she wrapped the photos, Marina listened to Mike tell his sister what had happened to him. Her heart swelled when he told Ruth how much he loved her, and that he wasn't sure if they would ever see each other again, but that he wanted her to know that he would always love her, no matter where he was. Lifting a hand, she hastily wiped a tear from her cheek when she heard Mike's footsteps as he came back down the narrow hallway. He stepped into the room, a frown on his face.
"What's wrong?"
she asked. He looked up from the file he was holding.
"They have decided there is a serial killer on the loose here. They even have Charlie listed as a victim.
If they aren't careful, they'll have everyone buying guns and running around like lunatics, he scowled.
What are you going to do?
She asked, walking over to him. I faxed off the info and pictures of Jenny and Carly, left a detailed note giving my immediate resignation due to a family emergency, and mailed off a letter to Ruth telling her what to do with all my assets here. There isn't much else I can do, he replied, with a sigh. I did tell them that Ross Galloway is innocent. It looks like they are trying to pin my disappearance on him as well.
So we can leave now? She asked.
Mike closed the file and walked over to his desk. I have one more phone call to make, he said, leaning down to brush a kiss across her lips. Then we'll leave. Marina rubbed her arms and smiled.
Good. It's as cold here, she laughed.
He paused and shrugged out of his jacket. Here, he said, wrapping the jacket around her shoulders.
Thank you, she sighed. 5 minutes,
I promise, he said, walking around his desk and sitting down. Opening the file again, he picked up the phone and pressed the keypad. His gaze moved to the clock on the wall. He grimaced. It was almost 5 in the morning here, so it was the same in California. He sat up when the phone answered on the second ring.
Asahi Tanaka, the voice greeted.
Agent Tanaka, this is Mike Holbrook from the Lincoln County Police Department, Mike said.
You aren't dead, Asahi replied.
Mike chuckled and sat back in his chair.
No, I'm not dead, he agreed, lifting a hand to run it across the back of his neck. Did you find the missing women? Asahi inquired.
Mike was silent for a moment, his mind replaying everything that had happened. If Marina hadn't been standing there looking at the photos on the wall, he would have thought he'd dreamed the entire incident.
Yeah, I found them. Carly Tate and Jenny Ackerley are safe and happy, Mike replied. Can you tell me where they are? Asahi persisted.
Mike's head was shaking, even as he realized that Agent Tanaka couldn't see him.
They won't be coming back, he replied with a sigh.
And you, Detective Holbrook? What about you? Asahi asked, in a clipped tone.
I won't either, Mike answered.
Silence greeted his response.
Mike knew Asahi was still on the other end. He could hear the sound of traffic in the background. Are they real?
Mike debated on how he should answer Asahi. Did he tell the government that, yes, there are alien worlds out there, just not as far away as they thought? Or did he just hang up and not say anything else? In the end, he compromised, the pen in his hand flowing over the words he had written.
Yes, Mike replied. Goodbye, Agent Tanaka.
The last sound that Mike heard was Asahi's breath. He hung up the receiver. He was pretty sure it would be prudent for him and Marina to make a hasty departure. If he had been in Asahi's position, he knew he'd be on the phone already.
Time to go, Mike said, closing the file again and rising from his seat.
He walked over to the door and turned out the light. Turning to the left, he headed for the back entrance. He knew where the cameras were, but it wouldn't make a difference. By the time Asahi figured out what was going on, Mike and Marina would be long gone.
Are we going home?
Marina asked, resting her hand on her stomach. Mike threaded his fingers through her hand and nodded.
Yeah. We're going home, he said.
Good. I would not want our child living in this foggy world, she said, following him out the door.
Mike had been looking up at the surveillance camera, but quickly turned back to her, Marina's words echoing in his ears. She was waiting for him. The sound of the door closing behind him echoed loudly in the early morning fog, and a new sense of urgency filled him. Grabbing her hand, he pulled her down the alley.
You could have told me this when we got back, he said, opening the door to the truck and waiting for her to slide across the seat.
What fun would that have been? Now, yourself, you will look like this, she laughed, scooting closer to him and making a funny face. Plus, I wanted to make sure you would come back before I told you.
Mike cursed and backed out of the parking space, glad that there was no traffic behind him since he forgot to look first. Pressing on the accelerator, he mumbled for her to fasten her seatbelt. The drive back to the state park felt like it took forever. A few minutes before 7, Mike replaced the keys under the seat of the truck, and tucked the note he had written to Marty in the sun visor. This time, they parked in the parking lot near the beach. Sliding out of the truck, he turned to help Marina down. He wrapped his arms around her and held her for a moment. He never wanted to let her go. She reached up and touched his cheek when he closed his eyes for a moment.
"Are you sure you want to do this?" she quietly asked.
Mike pressed a kiss against the center of her palm.
"I've never been surer of anything in my life," he said. "How are you feeling?"
"Good. The trees here are very talkative," she said, touching her forehead. "They have so much to tell."
Mike looked at her with a startled expression.
"You can hear them?" he asked, in surprise.
Marina nodded.
"Ever since we got here. They remember you. They said you are the man with the animal that waters many trees," she chuckled.
Mike's gaze moved to the trees in wonder. Shaking his head, he gathered the backpacks from the back of the truck, picked up the box, and he nodded to her.
"Let's go home," he said,
tucking the box under his arm and gripping her hand tightly in his.
Coming next, The Sea Witch's Redemption, Seven Kingdoms, Tale 4. Off the coast of Yahats, Oregon. Gabe grabbed the net and began pulling it in. He enjoyed the peace and quiet of working offshore, the sound of the motor, the waves slapping against the hull of his boat, and the high-pitched cries of seagulls hoping for an easy meal were his companions. He preferred them above anything else. He frowned when he felt the net shift. Afraid it might have caught on something, he looked over the side. The last thing he wanted to do was take a chance of it snagging and tearing. It was a pain in the ass to patch. Shifting, he pulled again. This time, it wasn't the strange weight in it that concerned him, but the low moan.
"What the hell?"
he muttered, pressing on the winch control button. "Shit!" Gabe's eyes widened when he saw a person in the net. Moving swiftly, he finished pulling in the net and lowered it to the deck of the rocking boat. Grabbing the side, he released it from the rigging and knelt next to the still body.
"Damn it," Gabe muttered under his breath. "I don't need a dead body on my boat."
He rolled the figure over and drew in a shocked breath when he saw that it was a woman. Yanking off his gloves, he carefully brushed the long tangle of midnight hair back from the pale face. He cursed again when he touched the icy cold skin of her neck. He was trying to find the vein in her neck to see if she was still alive when he jerked back as another moan escaped her.
"Hey, lady," Gabe said in a rusty voice. "Can you hear me?"
He watched in fascination as the thick black lashes of her eyelids fluttered for a moment before she opened her eyes. He stared down into the crystal clear green depths, wondering who in the hell she was and why she was miles off the Pacific coast in freezing water. He was just about to ask her that when she rolled to her side and threw up all over his rubber boots. "Ah, hell," he muttered, looking down at the heaving figure. This concludes A Witch's Touch by S. E. Smith. Narrated by David Brennan, member of SAG-AFTRA. Copyright 2018 by S. E. Smith. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with S. E. Smith and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.